Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic. Covenstead is brought to you by the co-creators of Ironbound, Guardians of Nirvala. Ironbound is a fantasy TTRPG about witches versus machines. Become one of the brave Ironbound and use your magic to defend Nirvala from the mechanized locust-like apothecary.
So before we begin, I think there's two momentous occasions I think we need to draw attention to before we get into our topic. Mm-hmm. The first of which, on a personal level, I'm recording this from home. Danny knows this. Yes, Danny knows this very well from any time beforehand. And any of you who have listened to any of the previous episodes might notice the varying qualities of background noise and sounds. Sometimes there's trucks, sometimes there's babies. We live in a very remote area, and internet has always been an issue. So I've always had to go somewhere else to record. And I used to record from behind the pet store that I used to work at, because they never changed the Wi-Fi password. So I milked that for as long as possible. And then when they did finally catch on and change the password, I started going to some friends of mine and using their Wi-Fi. But they have a baby, so that's hence the baby sounds. But my internet has just been upgraded, and it's now possible that Danny and I are actually recording this while I am in my house. I don't have to commute in order to podcast. I feel like I'm part of the 21st century.
All right.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly more comfortable.
It is. Oh, it's just, it's, and even then too, I'm like still, I'm waiting for like things to crash or, you know, like there's to be like this incredible lag or something, but we have been doing some tests and so far so good. And there we go. Danny, what's the other exciting news going on? That basically when people listen to, if you listen to this the day it drops, what other exciting thing do we have going on?
Oh, we have a Kickstarter going on. Actually,
yeah.
We are raising some money, some funds to kind of just keep the podcast going, just maintenance fees and that sort of thing, so that we can keep recording and keep bringing you content like this. So if you're enjoying it, go ahead and check that out. There'll be a link.
Kickstarter is opening up a new category, and they're doing a promotion called Witch Starter, a very clever play on words. And We just kind of saw this as an opportunity to kind of throw the podcast out there, you know, something that we've been doing already and would like to grow and expand on. So if you're listening to this during the month of October of the year 2022, we'll actually have our link in the show notes and everything to it. We're keeping things really simple. This isn't something that we wanted to create kind of like a class system of just like, oh, well, we have our backers and then we have the other listeners. This is more of a way for like a buck or $3 to basically kind of help us cover the costs, but also two, to try and work on, you know, one of the things we talked about when we first, you know, set up this entire idea is that we wanted to establish a kind of an online community for listeners and just anyone else that just happens to share an interest in these themes. And so we're really hoping that this is an opportunity to, you know, to get a little attention, get, be able to kind of share some of the spotlight that Kickstarter is doing at the moment and use it to try and help our podcast grow. So even if it's just, you know, for $1 American, that would be great. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So cool. All righty then. There we go. We've plugged ourselves. Let's get into our main topic. Danny, what is the rule of three? I know it's something you've mentioned it to me before, and we've made mention of it in some of the writings that we've done for Ironbound so far, but what exactly is the rule of three?
The rule of three is a philosophy and idea that many Wiccans, non-pagans, and many pagans and Wiccans and of all varieties adhere to. Not everyone does, but most pagan religions have some form of it. Christianity even has a form of it in terms of the golden rule, which is, you know, the golden rule, of course, treat others as you would want to be treated. And the rule of three is similar to that. The rule of three goes, ever mind the rule of three, what you send out comes back to thee. And in essence, it means exactly that. It's not hard to figure out. Whatever you send out, whatever energy, whatever message you send out, whatever, it'll come back to you eventually, times three. And three times is fast, three times is hard. And that's positive or negative. And so, you know, whether you do something positive or negative, it'll come back to you. So it's a call to watch what you're putting out in the world. You know, treat others with kindness, respect, and all of that. And that's what's going to come back to you. If you don't, you'll get that back. So it's pretty simple, but it's a very important rule. And it's hard for a lot of people to adhere to sometimes because we forget, you know, because we're so caught up in ourselves. But that's basically the gist of the rule. It's karma. It's karma. It's making sure that, you know, you're minding what you're putting out in the world and not being unkind or selfish or any of those things. Just think about how you would want to be treated in certain situations and treat people like that. Somebody cuts you in line at the coffee shop, you know, how do you react to that? Do you yell at them, tell them to get the back of the line? Do you just let it go? You know, think about what you would want to do in that situation. You know, try to give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't realize. Maybe they really had something going on and they forgot to mention it. And because they were so caught up in what was happening in their lives, you know. How would you want to be treated? And then treat that person accordingly. It goes for small stuff like that. And it goes for big things too. If someone comes and tells you some horrific thing happened to them. Or they tell you about some big life change, you know, getting married, having a baby, whatever, getting divorced, even if it's not a positive life change and all, you know, or it is, how would you want somebody to treat you in those situations? You know, what would you want to hear? And how would you want others to treat you if you were in that same situation? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I think when I first heard that, it made me think about, I've heard that term used in RPGs actually before, but also too in comedy. But oh, I've always heard of it before. Yeah, it's kind of like, I know with Mel Brooks, that was a big thing, you know, like comedy comes in threes. Yeah. If you're going to, you know, list three examples of something, the third one's the funny one. The third one is that's the actual joke. The first two are the setup.
Right.
Yeah. And in RPGs, it's been something where more so particularly in Dungeons and Dragons, the idea of alignment is set up in a 3x3 system. And so that's what I wondered if that's what the rule of threes was when it came to Wicca, was the sense of, there are three mantras, so to speak, or something like that, or there's three aspects of life or something. So it's interesting that it turns out to be something completely different than what I expected. And yet at the same time too, it's very similar, but like, you know, like so much else I'm discovering about this, there's a lot that's similar. It's just getting the names and terminology, so to speak. So yeah. Neat.
Yeah, it is funny that you said that, because I was just telling Nathan about the rule of three in storytelling the other day. I just mentioned it. So it was funny that you brought that up, because we were watching, we were watching The Boys is what it was. And they were like, oh man, Frenchie would be sorry to miss this. One group says that. The next group goes, oh man, Frenchie would have been really upset. Frenchie would be so upset he missed it. And I'm like, yeah, now it's going to come around a third time. Nathan was like, what do you mean? I'm like, they're going to mention it a third time. And this time it's going to be Frenchie going like, I'm really sorry I missed it. You know, like that's the end of the joke. You know, they set up with one group, set up with another. And then the punchline is the guy they're talking about says it, like confirms what they were saying, you know?
Yeah.
And I was explaining that. He's like, oh, I'm like, yeah, you can use it in writing. I mean, you use it in novels in terms of things coming back and clues if you want people to pick those up, you know, and it works in comedy. It works for a lot of things in storytelling. If you're trying to highlight something, make the audience remember something, want to be able to cycle back to something, the rule of three. And it happens to be three. Three is the magic number where it's not overdone. They're not harping on the joke, but it is a bit of an extended sort of joke, you know, that then lands. Or if you're talking about information, the third one is where that actually information becomes useful, you know. Oh, I mentioned that she was carrying a flashlight with her, and then I mentioned it again, you know, and then the third time she actually has to use it, you know.
Yeah,
like the first time I say, oh, she's, you know, my character's went through her bag. She pushes back the flashlight she had in there for some unknown reason to get her wallet, you know, and you're just saying it innocuously. Oh yeah, she pushes past the flashlight she had in there to get out her wallet. The second time you mention it, it's something else. She's like, oh, you know, she tried to find something without looking into the bag, but all she hit was the flashlight at first, you know, and she didn't have time. And then the third time will be when she actually has to use the flashlight, you know. Oh, the power went out. Thank God she had the flashlight in her bag, you know, and then you mentioned it twice innocuously. And then the third time it comes in handy. So, but yeah, so it's a simple rule for writing and for living, but it's hard. It's kind of the hardest one, you know, because it's a very conscious effort on people's part to try to remember that. And especially when emotions are high, it can be hard to remember how you would want to be treated. You're kind of reacting to what's going on and what's happening and what somebody's saying to you. And it takes a conscious moment of reflection to sit and think, how would I want someone to treat me? How would I want somebody to react? And I found the best way for me to mind the rule of three and remember it is always give myself some time before responding to anything, no matter what it is. You know, just take 10 seconds, just like, you know, be like, give me a second. And then you just kind of breathe, wait 10 seconds. And then that time is usually, allows you to kind of rein in whatever it is you're feeling in order to respond in the way that you want to respond. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then does this mean that the number three has a kind of religious significance in Wicca?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have three, you know, the maiden, mother, crone. So we have that representation of the goddess, that there is three. And when you use and because of that, three is a very good number to use when you're doing things in a circle and ritual. You know, you chant something three times, you know, so mote it be, so mote it be, so mote it be, you know, you like, if you have to repeat something, you know, you do it three times, or if you have a bell, you clap the bell three times, you know. Three is a number to use because it represents the different phases of our life, maiden, mother, and crone, you know, young, you know, and then in the middle, and then older. And so it's a really sacred, and it's not the only religion that has three as a sacred number either. You know, Christianity does, for one, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you know. So yeah. It just is an all around good number to use for that perspective. You know, if you gotta wrap something up, wrap it three times around whatever you're wrapping, you know, one, two, three, you know, So yeah, I mean, it's a very important number. It's one that's easy to use, one that's representative of the different phases of our lives and the past, present, and future as well. And so you're kind of acknowledging the passing of time and the passing of different phases, and that things are transitory in a way, you know, that you have different phases of your life. You have different living in, you're changing all the time, changing who you are as a person, you know. So yeah, it's a really big number in Wicca for sure.
You know, it's interesting too, is, you know, like as we're talking, and obviously being a podcast, no one can see this. But on my screen, I've got in the corner here our little symbol that we have with our logo, which is the pentagram over top of a circle of different elements and then a red D20 in the middle. And I'm looking at it now as you're talking about this, and I can really kind of see that the pentagram actually looks like a collection of triangles just rotated in different directions. And so it's kind of like, you know, and I mean, as a graphic designer, that kind of symbolism always really gets me, you know? And so, yeah, that's really interesting, actually, that even that level of symbolism just kind of permeates. It's like this subtle little thing that's in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's neat. And it's interesting. It's something that is just shared across so many different religions. To your knowledge, and I know that this can be really hard to say because there was nothing really written before with old paganism. But do you believe this is something that comes from the ancient traditions, or is this a more kind of modern take on paganism?
This is more of a modern phrasing of it. And by modern, I mean like 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that when Wicca was coming together as a religion, that's something that one of the pagan writers came up with and people kind of adopted it. And it makes sense. Here's the thing, you know, people, you know, initially, I don't know how people think of it, but people sometimes think of it in like supernatural terms. You know what I mean? Like, oh, if you put this out in the world, the universe is going to like consciously make you feel bad or feel good or bring good things to you or whatever. That's not really how it works. It's really talking about like the ripple effect. And, you know, because if you do a good action, you're putting yourself in a position to have good things happen to you because somebody might want to repay you. Let's say, you know, you do a kindness for somebody. You're not really expecting anything in return, but you do a kindness for somebody, you know, loan them money, you know, anything like that, sit and listen to them if they need an ear, you know, whatever it is you're doing where you're putting something good out into the world. It's not necessarily like the universe conspires to give you good things back. It's more like because you did that, that person or that group or whatever are inspired to be good to you in return. Like you listened, you know, to your friend go on and on and on about how they were heartbroken and you know, you were helping them and giving it. So the next time you need some help with something, they're willing to do it. You know, you know, you just say, oh, you say to them, oh man, you know, I got to move this, that, and the other thing this weekend. I'm not really looking forward to it. And I'm going to be all by myself. And your friend who you would listen to, just like we says, hey, let me help you out because, you know, you help me, you know, you listen to me. It's the least I can do. Right.
Yeah.
That's how it works. You know, it doesn't work because there's like a ledger that someone's keeping tabs of and throwing out magic to get what is going to happen to you. It's more like your actions are inspiring people to those same actions. And you often benefit from that in a certain way, just like negativity. You badmouth somebody, well, they're going to turn around and badmouth you more than likely. You know, you're not going to make a good impression on people who care about that person that you're badmouthing. You know what I mean? So they're going to say bad things about you, which is you inspire those feelings in others. It's not that there's some detached force trying to balance some ledger book. It's saying you, what you put out inspires others to that same energy. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does actually. Now, one of the things that I then kind of wonder about, and I think this is, you know, we've talked about something like this before, where I kind of come into religions with a little bit of baggage myself, having come from family and people, kind of like my own little society, that basically took those kind of mantras, beliefs, and really screwed them up. Like in the sense of kind of like do unto others as you would want them to do unto you kind of thing, was really taken way out of hand. And you know I've known people that were considered themselves to be highly religious but were really truly shitty people when it came down to it. So for me, I wonder, and this is obviously a very personal question, for you, is it one of those things where do you use the rule of threes to guide your decisions, or is it more so to reinforce what you would already feel and do and act already? Like, for example, I had this discussion with someone who I'm not going to bother identifying, but someone who used to be really close to me, who used to be really flummoxed by the idea that I didn't really kind of, you know, believe in the Ten Commandments in particular. Mm-hmm. And my response was, well, to me, those are just kind of, that's just a given. Like, I don't kill people because, you know, I read the Bible. I don't kill people because I don't want to. That's not my interest, you know, right. Like that's, you know. And for them, it was this whole like, well, how do you know not to, you know, live your life a certain way or something like that. It's just like, I don't know, my parents.
Right. I was going to say, it reminds me of something Penn Jillette said of Penn and Teller. He basically says, no, I don't need something like that. I kill exactly as many people as I want to. And the number of people I want to kill is zero. You know, yeah. He says you don't need the, you know, like the old adage of if you need a whole bunch of rules to keep you on moral standing, you probably weren't that good of a person to begin with, you know?
Right. Yeah. So then for you, is it is the rule of three a guidepost, or is it more of a, when in doubt, you look at the rule of three and said like, oh, I don't know what I want to do. Okay. You know what? Let me kind of stop and take a look at this. And, you know, from this point of view,
it's both, actually. I mean, depending, you know, sometimes if you're in a particular mood, it's much easier to follow that as a guidepost. You know what I mean? Like, it's much easier to do it in the moment. You know, if you're feeling good, you're in a good mood, you have a lot of spoons and stuff like that, you know, it's easy just to be let it be a guidepost in your life. It's easier. It may not always be easy, but it's easier. You know, you're feeling good, you're having a good day. It's easy to be kind and have smiles for people and things like that. It's on the days that aren't so great that you kind of need to look at the rule to remind yourself, really. You know what I mean? Yeah. And everybody goes through those phases. You know, we all have bad days, weeks, months, years, you know? And in those times, it's a reminder. You know what I mean? It's something to go back to when you need it. And I find, and this is my personal experience, I find I need it less if I'm, you know, if I'm getting rest, if I'm feeling full, if things are going well, et cetera, then it's easy for me to not have to reference it, not have to constantly remind myself, you know, whatever energy you put out, that's what's coming back to you because I'm in a good mood. So I'm putting good energy out. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling generous. I'm feeling kind. But like I said, everyone has those days. So on the days when I'm not feeling that great, and it's going to be a lot harder for me to remember the energy I'm putting out there because I'm upset, I'm overtired, I haven't eaten, you know, things aren't going great, having, you know, struggling, that's when it's harder. And that's when I look to it as a guide, you know, like, I don't know what to do. I know I don't trust myself to do the right thing because of the mood I'm in. You know, I know that that's a thing and I don't trust it. So I'm going to refer to the rule of three, you know, to remember that, to put good energy out there, despite if I'm feeling bad, you know, I don't need to bring any, you know, I don't need to lash out at people and make them feel bad just because of that, you know?
Yeah.
That answer that a bit?
Yeah, it does. It does actually. Yeah. And even then too, I could totally see it as being something where, like, if you had said, I don't know, I never thought about that before, because it is definitely one of those kind of, like, you know, really deep introspective questions. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to know what's going on in your head internally and in your soul, I guess, in a sense, because we're talking about religion. So that's why, you know, but it's one of those things where I'm curious about, and that's why I like when we have our conversations like this, because I don't feel like there's a lot of people that I could ask this question to and get, like, a very direct and honest answer. So I like the fact that we can get this in depth with it, and I learn, and that's what I like about this, and that's why I hope other people are able to learn.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, with the number three, then, is that something where if you see something that, you know, comes in the number three or something like that, do you take that to be kind of like a good omen, so to speak? Like, if it's one of those things where, say, you have a moment where you're not completely sure about something, and then suddenly the number three appears, or something comes in sets of three or something like that.
it could be
something to say,
you know, I wouldn't say, like, in general, you know, it's not like, oh, you see a rainbow, that's a good sign, you know?
Yeah.
It's more like if it was required or made sense for whatever I've been asking to be revealed to me, you know, then I'd see it. Yeah. And it would be a sign. Usually if you're, you know, if signs come, this is just my experience. So I'm just one witch. So, in my experience, signs and portents, and signs that you're on the right path or the wrong path, or signs of indicating what you should do, tend to be along the lines of what represents that particular thing, right? Like, let's say an easy one, right? I'm running low on money. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I do a spell, a ritual where I'm asking, you know, and this is where you would phrase things so that it doesn't harm anyone else. You know, you say, you know, I would like to find a way to bring more money in my life so I can pay for rent, I can pay for food and stuff like that, right? And then the next day you walk around, and just as you're staring at something, you know, at a window in a store, a help wanted sign goes up right in your face. Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe that will help. You know, maybe I can get this job and get money. Or, you know, then, you know, you're walking along and you find a $20 bill on the ground or something like that. Usually has to do with whatever you're asking about, usually most of the time, or a sign that has to do with what the universe is trying to tell you. Like, let's say without my knowledge and without my asking, there is some deity that wants to get my attention, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not aware of it. I haven't asked for anything like this, but I start seeing signs of that god deity everywhere. You know what I mean? Let's say it's Odin, I guess. And so Odin has all these symbols. He has the ravens, you know, his eye is missing. You know, so I start to see stuff that kind of represents Odin. You know what I mean? Like, I see ravens everywhere, you know, or, you know, my friend gets an eye patch, you know, because they had surgery, and I see them, and it's like a reminder, like, you see hints that bring your mind back to the topic of what you were asking for. So I would say if three was an appropriate sign for what I was asking for, then I would see that and I would take that as a sign, but not on its own. It would have to be within a context for me anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. You were mentioning before, you know, when it comes to, you know, like in storytelling and like we mentioned too, like, you know, in comedy and stuff like this, how things come in threes. Is that, how influential do you think is that to you when it comes to, because, you know, the last couple episodes we've been talking about creative energy, and, you know, like the different ways that both you and I use it and come up with it. Is that a kind of an influence for you when you're like a very heavy influence for you when you're writing, where if you're coming up with something and you're stuck, you know, does trying to think of it in terms of threes, do you find that to be really helpful? Or is it something where when you kind of look back on it, it's already subconsciously in there? You know, for example, if you've got dynamics going on between different characters, you just inadvertently, without even knowing it, had them in sets of threes. You've got character A who knows character B, but is also connected to character C, and so forth, etc. Or is that something where you use it to say, it's like, oh, I don't know what to do with this character. Okay, let me take a look at this in threes. What are two other characters that they can be connected to? So is it like an active part of your creativity, or is it more like it's just always there? It's very passive.
Oh,
I'm going to stump you on one of these questions.
No, well, I'm going to say the same thing I said for earlier. I mean, it's both, really. Sometimes I'm, you know, just because, you know, you and I have read so many stories, watched so much media and stuff like that, that sort of thing does permeate into your brain. It does. And so you can find yourself inadvertently putting something in the rule of three, you know, just because subconsciously it made sense to you, right? But you weren't consciously thinking about it. It just went in there. I have had instances like that, you know, like, oh, I need to make sure this was mentioned, you know, and I go, oh, I did that twice. Wow. Okay. That's good. So yeah, there have been times where it's just kind of, because humans are very good at pattern recognition. We are, as part of the way our brain functions. And you know, that's how we've survived. I mean, it's not just a quirk of human brain power. It's how we survive, noting patterns and adjusting accordingly to those patterns. You know, I know the tiger comes around at this time every night to the campfire. So because of that, I'm going to make sure I'm ready. Or that we're far away the next time it comes around, because I've spotted the pattern. So that goes back a long time in human instinct and memory. So it can be unconscious that you're putting something in there a certain number of times to make the exact right impact. And then there are other times when you have to do it consciously. You know, this isn't working. What's happening? Oh, you know, maybe if I looked at it in a rule of three kind of way, I can figure it out. You know, or you're like, I know this thing is important consciously. I know this thing is important. I want the audience to get it. So I'm going to go back and put it in there twice because I am consciously aware rather than subconsciously aware that it needs to be done. You know, oh, this item's super important. I better make sure that it gets mentioned a couple times before it needs to be used. So people aren't going, where the heck did she pull it? Go back to my earlier example. People won't go, where the hell did she pull a flashlight from? You know, no one mentioned she had a flashlight in her purse. Like, that's ridiculous. She just has it because she needs one. You know, and you're like, no, I don't want people to think that. So now you're like, okay, I'm just going to have to mention on the down low in the middle of other paragraphs that there's this flashlight in her purse that she keeps and all of that. So it's both. It is both.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you? Okay. What about you in terms of writing?
I know I do when I start coming up with examples. And even then it's kind of more of like a kind of like in sentence examples. And I think that was more so something where I kind of started doing it and then realized, you know, later on going through and reading stuff is just like, you know, oh, I'm always doing it in threes. And now I just make a point of, you know, when I do need to come up with examples, it's like, all right, I need three quick examples. It's like moments when you would roll dice would include trying to kick open a door, trying to jump from rooftop to rooftop, and whenever you're trying to convince someone of the error of their ways. Boom, that's good enough. I got a good variety going in there. I know I was definitely very conscious of it when we started working on the current version of Ironbound. And that was after going through the reading material and seeing like, okay, so there's a thing about the rule of threes, and that's a big part of Wicca, at least for Danny. And for me, it was more so it's just like if I can make Danny happy, then that, you know, that's the goal. Then we'll try and make sure everyone else gets it too. But that was something, it was a very active point where there are three main portions of the character sheet for the player to pay attention to. There's their white dice, or basically their active dice that represent what they are consciously trying to do. There are the black dice, or basically kind of like the opposing dice that are resisting them. And then there's the health stats. And each one of those three is then also divided into three, where there's three different ways to get white dice. There's three different ways to apply black dice, and there's three different forms of health. And that was something where I was very conscious of, you know, how do we do these things in threes? I didn't want to have anything in pairs. I didn't want to have them in fours. I wanted to have things always in sets of three. And even then, if I remember correctly, even when it came to health, you don't max out at 10, you max out at 9. And so in that sense, but that's because it fit the particular genre, the particular game that we're trying to tell. But I in general, I've personally have always kind of looked at something. So some of my favorite movies are ones where they do a phenomenal job of they mention something in like the first act, and then suddenly out of nowhere it becomes incredibly relevant in the third act. My all-time favorite movie is Snowpiercer.
Oh
I
yeah,
watch that movie
Snowpiercer, good one.
constantly. I constantly watch that one. And now after, you know, talking about this, I want to go back and watch it again, like I need an excuse. And see if I can find a third reference because there are so many times in the movie where in Act One, something that's mentioned that just seems incredibly innocuous suddenly becomes very important in Act Three. Or maybe sometimes it's in Act Two and it becomes super relevant in Act Three. Shaun of the Dead is another one. That's one where the gags are told twice. Or so I thought. And now I want to go back and watch that one again and see if they're actually in threes. I just only paid attention to the initial setup and the payoff.
Well, I know one example from Shaun of the Dead.
Which one?
Not from Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, the other one, the other Edgar Wright movie.
Yes.
And that one, they had a swan joke in Hot Fuzz, and that was in Rules of Three. Like, they get the assignment to track down the swan, because the guy calls, and so Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, they run out there trying to get the swan, can't get the swan, they get called to something else, so they run off. And then the second time they're driving around and the swan goes in front of the car, right? And then the third time they pick up the swan, put it in the car, and then the swan attacks the guy at the end, forcing him to crash the car. So it shows up, the swan shows up three times. And in the last one, it becomes relevant that the swan is there because it's the thing that keeps the bad guy from getting away.
Damn.
So there's an example from Hot Fuzz because Edgar Wright's good at that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. He's a very kind of meta director writer.
Because in Shaun of the Dead, for instance, they bring up three times the neighborhood that Shaun lives in. they do three different versions of his morning walk, his morning routine. So in the beginning of the movie, you watch him get up, go downstairs, you know, get dressed, go outside, go to the store, get his food at the shop, put money on the counter, et cetera, et cetera. You watch him do that, completely normal. Second time you'd see it, it's after the apocalypse is happening and you see a zombie apocalypse stuff, you know, zombie going around him, but he doesn't even notice like what's happening. And he walks around and does what he was doing before, but it's different because there are zombies around now. And like the door on the fridge and the convenience store he goes to has blood on it. All that stuff. There's people walking around. He assumes they're drunk, but they're zombies. And then the third time it's after, and we see his routine has changed a bit from there. So there, you know, not only is it used to hit something, but you can also use it to show progression over time. You know what I mean? Like even if you wanted to do something like, oh, this is going to show parts of my character's life. So you do one scene where there's a kid, you know, one part where they're a kid and you get to know them. Second part where they're a bit older and you get to know them. And then finally, as they're at the age where the story is going to start, you know, you can do something like that if it makes sense for the story. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that you can look at three and come back to it and structure stuff around three and think of it that way to reinforce the themes of your book or show or whatever, you know. In terms of Shaun of the Dead example, that is meant to show what Shaun's life is like, you know, that he is so just beaten down, he doesn't take notice of the things around him. And we see that the first two times, but then the third time we see it, we see that he's taking more note of his surroundings, saying hi to people, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like, so you don't always have to use it as this object showing up. You can use it to show phases or character progression or something like that as well.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I never thought about that before. But I mean, I think part of that too just comes down to that. Well, I've never had like any kind of formalized training when it comes to creative. Anything that I've ever learned has always been technical. Like even with my design work, I didn't take a graphic design course that, you know, taught me how to express certain things or anything like that. I took print media. So for me, it was more of like here's how to make sure the red looks red. Here's how to make sure that the file is balanced and it is as small a size as possible. I guess maybe that's why it just I'm not as aware of that as obviously as you are. Jeez, that's blowing my mind actually. What's and also that? Too, it's a great opportunity. It's blowing my mind. Like it's a great excuse for me to be able to just go back and watch this stuff again anyways. Just like, now I have research to do.
Yeah, it's one of those things where once you see it, you can't unsee it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my husband has always been he always marvels at my ability to predict what's gonna happen, but it's not as great of a skill as he imagines it is. Because you know the rule of three, you can kind of predict when they're setting one of those up. So therefore you can predict probably what the end three is, what number three is going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a useful trick for being able to like figure out stuff, you know? Like
cool.
I mean, even horror movies for sure do that. I mean, any genre, it doesn't matter. In Get Out. And the use of the cup, the teacup. You ever see Get Out?
Oh, yeah.
So she can hypnotize and she uses her glass and spoon to kind of create the hypnotic effect, right? So the first time you see it, they're sitting at the table and they're talking about quitting smoking. And they meant, she can help you with that. She can hypnotize people. and you won't want to smoke. And the whole time she's swirling the spoon around her cup. So you get that hint. The second time you see it is when she actually hypnotizes him the second time. And, you know, has him talk about how his mom died and all of that stuff in the chair in the living room at night when he goes out to get a cigarette. Right. That's the second time, because after that, he wakes up in bed and all of that and everything. Then the third time it comes about is when he is being attacked by the brother. When he realizes what's going on and tells her to get the keys, and then the mom picks up the cup and you know what's going to happen. And then he goes down.
Yeah.
So you see, it works there. Yeah, it was brought up twice and used twice. And then the third time it was at a really important point where he was trying to get away and then didn't because she had hypnotized him. And then he uses that knowledge to move on and put, cotton in his ears and then breaks the cup later, but that's not like the third time it becomes important. It's just him having learned about that, but the third time is when he goes down and then wakes up strapped to the chair or whatever and actually finds out what's going on. So
yeah
so it works. I mean, if you stop there, start thinking about it, it totally works. And and most of the time, you know. So
jeez. And here I was, I thought that movies always did trilogies simply because Star Wars did a trilogy. But in thinking about it, it was just kind of more of like, well, even then, why did George Lucas decide no, three movies is enough? You know. Probably because who is the name of the person who basically studied mythology and was it Joseph Campbell?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hero with a thousand faces.
Yes, there we go. That's the one.
Yeah.
So man, oh man. So and it's interesting. It's, you know, it's another one of those correlations that you just see time and time again across different societies. We've been watching a few kind of like archaeology based shows. And there's always been neat when you see, you know, things that different cultures share and everything else like that. And it's just the fact that, like you were saying before, you know, humans are really big into pattern recognition. Something about the number three across so many societies has latched on to people, and you see it in, you know, in so many things, in their religious beliefs and everything like that. It's just, it's neat. And it's also too, because as a joke, we also watched one of the, one of these quote unquote history shows, but it's all about how aliens actually did everything. Like a big Sesame Street production number where you just see a flying saucer laying down and then a number three comes out and then just little kids shout out, three! But yeah. No, it's neat. It's those neat little correlations, you know, and the fact that, it shows up so often in fiction, it makes me realize now just that's why it seems to be so prevalent in so many RPGs and that kind of thing. It's because that's just part of fiction writing. And that's what, even when, you know, RPGs started off as being very war game based, once they really started leaning into the more narrative elements, it makes total sense now why those kind of things would start to appear, you know, like I said, even with how D&D has the alignment system, which for anyone that's never played before, alignment is basically, it was intended to be a way to kind of shortcut your kind of like your overall personality trait, so to speak. So there was the different spectrums of good, neutral, and evil, and then lawful, neutral, and evil, and then you would create a combination. So you could be lawful good, neutral evil, neutral / true neutral. And the intent behind it was to simplify the process. It never did. It created so many questions and so many excuses to just be like, you know, well, my character is lawful good, and so because they're a prisoner, I think they're a piece of shit, and so my character's going to kill them. It's just like, well, whoa, whoa, hold on, you know. But yeah, it was just like, you know, that, yeah, just, oh man, my mind is blown at the moment. Woo. God, just making me rethink things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also making me think that maybe I should start taking some courses on, you know, like storytelling or something, because now I feel like I'm missing out. I feel like I skipped quite a few classes in English all of a sudden.
I mean, it doesn't just go for big things as well. For instance, teeny tiny, this is a trick that I learned in writing. Let's say you want like a fact that's going to be important to come up and be mentioned, so the audience notes it, but not necessarily consciously clocks it, so that later on when there's this reveal, right, that it becomes inevitable but surprising. Like, it's surprising to the reader, but it's also inevitable that it would be that way. For instance, let's say it's important that, you know, a character has a star tattoo. Okay. For whatever reason, that's important somehow. So what you do is, when you want to introduce it and you're describing the person, set it in the middle of three other descriptors. And then what happens is you clock it, you read it. But because it's in the middle, most people, do you know that we read really by looking at an entire sentence, the first and last word, and kind of piecing it together that way?
Yes, I have heard that.
Right. Same principle, right? So I'm going to write down three things about this person. Mark introduced himself to me. He had long, dark hair, star tattoo on his hand, and he was wearing black leather boots. That's how you do it, right? Now, the star tattoo is in there, but the things they're most going to remember are the beginning and end parts, that he had dark hair and was wearing boots. Goes with the same for a paragraph. If you want to put something important, put it at the start of the paragraph or the end of the paragraph that you really want to stand out at that particular moment. If you don't necessarily want it to come out, or it's not important, or you don't want to come out right then, put it in the middle, either of the sentence or the paragraph, because it'll be in there. It'll subconsciously be absorbed, but it won't be truly consciously clocked most of the time. And so then when it becomes important, like I opened the door and saw the hand with a star tattoo on it laying there in the hallway. Now it's important, right? And your character, your person will have made the connection subconsciously, right? So they didn't think the star tattoo was going to be important, but it was there. So they had it in the back of their mind, but now the star tattoo is brought up again. And then all of a sudden, that little piece of information they got earlier clicks and they go, oh my God, it's Mark. The right. Reader does, not necessarily the person. And then that gives the reader the thrill of having figured something out. You want them to clock it just a little bit before the actual protagonist does, so that they have that feeling of putting something together and being involved and making connections and feeling engaged with the story.
Okay. It's making me think in the sense of just like, or at least how I design stuff, how I write games, because that's my creative energy, is actually making the games and writing the rules for it and everything like that. It's making me think I also want to start going back and reading those to see how that information is parsed, because the way you're talking about there is that one of the biggest issues when it comes to RPGs in particular is that they're so abstract,
right?
And it's very difficult. A lot of people, even still, for a medium that's been around for 50 years, we still have a hard time parsing the information that we see in these rule books, which you can't play without the rule books. And so it's kind of got me wondering, is it something where that's an element maybe that I'm missing, whereas I'm not explaining things in threes? If I've always looked at, like, if for me, Shaun of the Dead was always done in pair, you know, you see it in the beginning and then you see it at the end. Have I been writing my stuff that way? And maybe that's been affecting how people understand my work, because I'm not, once again, I clearly wasn't paying attention in English class enough to have recognized this by myself. I am learning a lot all of a sudden in this last hour. So yeah, I'm
well, another example. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Please educate me.
I was just gonna give another example. Like in particular in Hot Fuzz, the peace lily again that he had. We see the peace lily at the beginning.
Yeah.
He takes it, puts it in his room. It comes up again when he realizes he forgot a birthday. So he runs to the florist shop to try to get a peace lily for his friend for his birthday. And then the lady gets killed in the florist shop while he's there doing that. And he has to chase down the bad guy. The third time it comes into play is when he gets attacked in his room and he busts the peace lily over the head of the big guy attacking him.
Yes, that's right. Narf.
Yep. Three. I swear, if you start looking at stuff in threes, you'll see it. Oh, you will see how that works. And and as far as a game design goes, you know, I always think of it, especially in terms of like in mechanics and setting stuff, have something. If you have an item in your game, like a setting item or a mechanic, always make sure that it's in terms of the rule of three, making sure threes to make it solid, kind of a solid thing that happens. Have that one thing be supported by two other things, and then have the one thing also support a couple other things in return. So if you're looking at the rule of three, it's not necessarily like you have to do the same thing three times, but if you make sure that the stuff you're putting in there is supported in what I mean by supported by something that underlines what you're saying, right? So that, for example, in Ironbound, okay, like talking about setting stuff, you have the fire community, the people who are affected with fire. Okay. And let's say I make the setting, you know, I make it a very like hot place with hot springs and, you know, people need shade all the time and they do things and all of that. It's very hot there, right? So if I'm going to underline that it's hot there, let's say I say that, you know, the free community lives in a very hot climate. So that's my statement. That's the setting piece. And then I have to make sure that that is supported by at least two other things that I put in the sentence. If I'm going to say this place is hot, I need to make sure there are at least two things that I mention about the setting that underline the fact that it's hot.
Right.
Okay. Like, what food do they eat? Well, it's all going to be stuff that grows in a hot environment, you know, or and what clothes do they wear? So at least two things. It can be more, but you want to make sure anything that you really want to kind of emphasize or stand out, make sure it's supported by at least two other things that you mention in the description. And for mechanics, it's kind of the same thing. Make sure that mechanic is supported by either what the setting says and it makes sense, or another mechanic supporting another mechanic perhaps, or something else in the game. It's an easy way to kind of check and make sure your stuff is solid and you're not just throwing things in there that don't, they're just kind of floating out there unmoored and not attached to something It just makes everything feel more lived in and more solid and supported and makes more sense if you make sure that you add things that support it, at least two. Obviously, it can be more. I can write a ton of things that support the fact that it's hot in a certain area if I want to.
Right.
But I need at least two to make sure that that point is emphasized, if it's a point I want to emphasize. Right.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do it with every single thing, but if something is important and at least the main things that you want to get across, then yeah, it's important to do that and make sure that it's, you know, and a three is a good number to keep in mind about that. You know, have at least three things that underline this theme or the thing that's important or the thing you want them to remember about this place to get the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a good rule in terms of gaming as well, you know?
Yeah.
If you look at a mechanic, be able to name at least three reasons why it's there, right?
Right.
You know, mechanic, be like, oh, well, I mean, this mechanic is here so that people can roll this way. The second reason is because we're doing it like this, it supports the theme of the story this way. The dice make it feel more like this is happening in the context and the atmosphere that we want them to take it. You know, I always feel like mechanics should support what you're trying to say. It should feel like when mechanics and the setting work together, that is magic right there, because the system is supporting the setting is supporting the system and vice versa, you know, and all over the place. You know what I mean? You know, if you have a mechanic, you better make sure that it makes sense for what you're doing and is supported by the setting and not just a random mechanic somewhere, you know. It needs to make sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's like the three elements to any kind of game is there's setting, there's character, and then there are mechanics, and the three of them are all intertwined. The characters have to interact with the setting, and they do so by using the mechanics. The setting influences the character, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and everything else like that. Yeah, 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 you're right.
Yeah.
It's also, as we're talking about this, it's also kind of got me realizing, too, is one of the things that I've always kind of struggled with, and I guess I realized today that I was wrong in my thought about this, is that I always used to think that when a game provided an example of how to do something, that meant that the mechanic wasn't explained very well. Like, if you need to have an example for something, then clearly it wasn't explained very well. So then the issue is that we're not explaining things properly. But, you know, thinking about it now under this new context, you know, as if I were wearing like a new pair of glasses, where it's just like, wow, there's blades of grass down there, is that all games present something where it will give you a summary. It's like, okay, so in a nutshell, here's the quick version of how this works. And then it will give you the more concrete detail. You know, it like you're presented with the rules as if you're going to be the player. You're not going to be the GM. You don't need to know the nitty gritty, but when you roll dice, this is in general what happens. This is the sequence to follow. Then it gets explained in even more detail for those who need to know that kind of detail, most of the time being the GM. And then you've got the example to basically cement it and lock it into your head. It's just like, so if this example makes sense with everything else you've read, you now understand how this works. And you can then take it and start applying it to the game. So I have a feeling I've got some forums I've got to dig up on, and I've got some apologies to give, because I used to really have this cemented opinion of just like, no, examples are there because we're not explaining the game properly enough. And now it's like,
no,
I was very, very wrong about that. Wow.
Yeah. Because it's meant to give the information in slightly different ways so that it sticks.
Yeah.
You know, summarized, a lengthier explanation, and an example. Yeah, for sure.
Ooh.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I mean, and we even use karma mechanics in games, thinking of mechanics, you know? What is inspiration or drama die in 7C, right? Inspiration in D&D, drama die in 7C, or other things that use that system. There are quite a few systems out there that kind of have a karma system almost, where if you role play well, or you do certain things that are well within the character, or do something cool, you get a point, a die, an extra thing for it that you can then use to benefit yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, a way to cheat, so to speak. You know, just be like, well, yeah, normally you're not supposed to re-roll the die, but tell you what, if you spend that point that I gave you, you go right ahead and do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we even use karma mechanics in game in a certain extent. Some systems do, not all systems. Yeah. But I think it's actually good because it encourages it encourages the behavior. You're supporting the behavior you want to see. Remember what I said, you have to at least make sure that, you know, whatever mechanic you do is supported.
Yeah.
Right. And usually for those games, like for 7C, okay, it one gives the player a chance, an impetus to play their character a certain way, or the way that they're designed, or do things that are on their character sheet because they get rewarded for it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it supports that. And then it supports the GM in terms of the GM being able to use it to give motivation to players. So not only does it support the player, but it supports the GM as well, because the GM can then reward behavior they want to see in the game. They reward while playing. Everybody gets to see it. And for the player, the motivation to get that motivates them. So that's two ways that that mechanic is supported, because it serves a purpose on the player side and it serves a purpose on the GM side. Third purpose that it serves is the game, because what are the kind of three aspects of a game that you need to have? The player, the GM, and the setting, and the game itself. Mm-hmm. It supports the game because in 7C, the purpose of the game is that it's more storytelling and it is more dramatic. And that's how it's supposed to be run. It's supposed to be run like, you know, very swashbuckly, taking risks, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And having these extra points to spend supports that feeling, because to get those points, you have to role play the stuff that's on your sheet. So it supports the game because the mechanic itself creates the setting that you want to create. It supports the dramatic setting by being able to use those points to do dramatic swashbuckly things like dagger ride down sails, or win somebody over, or play a prank on them, or whatever you're going to do. So the mechanic makes the game the feel that it needs to have, motivates the player, and it gives the GM a tool to use to run the game and encourage behavior they want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense?
It does. It makes more sense now than ever before. Oh, I totally got to take the dogs for a walk and process all this. Man, oh man. Woo! I'm going to have to start asking you more questions that I just assumed I knew the answers for.
Well, on that note, We are a little bit past time. You're actually 10 minutes past time. So we've just been going on as we usually do. I hope this was useful to you. It sounds like Todd got something out of me running my mouth. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My family's going to be hearing about this for the next several days. Just, oh, I can't believe it.
Yeah. So I hope you all got something out of it, too. And until next time. Wish you a little gaming in your magic and a little magic in your gaming. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye, everybody.
The Covenstead podcast was created and produced by Daniel Delisle and Todd Crapper. Theme music written and composed by John Thompson from the Rook and Rask channel on Twitch. Definitely check them out. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.